Just a little more time is all we're asking for. Just a little more time could open closing doors. Just a little uncertainty can bring it down. Nobody wants to show you how. So if you're open to your own, you can never surrender. And if your life won't lead you home, you can never surrender. And when the night is cold and dark.
Good evening and welcome to the 69th podcast of the Never Give Up Show. I am Bailey Smith, your host, and I am really excited to be back live. Our call-in number is 516-531-9643, 516-531-9643. I have two incredible guests on tonight, and you won't want to miss it. We are also live at this very moment at blogtalkradio.com/friendstalk. If we do run over the time, the best way to continue listening to the show is by having calls in. So if you want to call in, just listen. We'd love to have you. Tonight we have two incredible guests that have been on the show before. They are incredible women. I will call them survivors. I will call them warriors. I will call them my friends. I will call them heroes. They are incredible women that have been through hell and back and have been out there advocating and helping others. And that's kind of how we've connected. I'm going to introduce our guests, Jen and Kelly. They are two women from Maine who are going to discuss their experience with both the police and the court system. They will also discuss a case out of your county, Maine, of a Hague mom who was arrested for kidnapping her own children. There is a growing outrage and a movement for change by those who have been victimized by the corrupt court system in the U.S. Everything from gender bias, largely in favor of men, with both DV and child custody cases in the courts. Corrupt police and court officials, child trafficking through DHS, also known as DCF or CPS, and corruption by both the police and the courts. Most of society does not have any idea that this is happening. We are taught to trust authorities and our government. We are taught to call 911 when a crime is committed, and the police and court system is for our protection. The reality is, more often than not, particularly for women, or leave their abuser, are re-victimized and abused by the courts and the police. There are actual crimes being committed by people in the criminal justice and family court system, and yet the focus is all too often remains on victims who report and speak out. Especially when you have a very big voice, especially with Kelly, who's been attacked by her own town, her own authorities that have are supposed to protect, that take a vow to protect, and same with Jen. I want to thank Marianne again for we did a show, I think, about 2 years ago, and I think Kelly heard the show and reached out to Jen when I was doing my own show, when I started the Never Give Up show, and connected us. And so for quite some time. We've been in touch. I connected them with this mom whose case is out of Maine, this Hig mom. And here we are tonight to discuss the corruption and all the horrific stuff going on in this small little town. Here we are. Welcome, Jen. Welcome, Kelly. You know, I was a little, like, out of it because I misplaced my page. I don't know if you were able to tell. I misplaced my paper where I had all the information on it. Anyway, welcome. Welcome back to...
Hi there.
Hi.
I by accident took out a file. I have a file for the show. I by accident took out a file of my own file for my own case with the DA's office. And I'm like looking through. I'm like, oh my God, this is the wrong file. So I quickly put it away and I must have stuck your paper in there. So that's what I was looking for the whole time I was talking. Thank God up on the computer in front of me, I have the bio. So anyway, thank you guys for doing the show last minute. I know, you know, no matter where we are on our healing journey, there's always triggers, even for myself. And, you know, talking about, you know, things you've been through and still going through and helping others dealing with things, there's still triggers. But it is also rewarding. You know, when I connected Sarah to you guys and I saw you guys chatting back and forth and she was so grateful, I was like, oh my gosh, okay, mute, let them take care of her. Because, you know, what am I supposed to do? Like, I don't know how to help this woman. I'm in that part of the world, you know, whatever. And, you know, you guys, I know that Kelly and Jen both have had their stuff in Maine, and who better than to connect them her with, you know? So thank you guys.
You're welcome.
And welcome.
Yeah. Thank you for
you guys are really truly, when I say heroes, really, Kelly, you've been through hell. Kelly's been on my show. You can scroll through all my shows and find her. She has some story. And Jen's been on more than once. This is, I think, your third time on. And still never ends. And they still agreed to come back on and discuss, you know, what's going on and also what Sarah Marie's going through. So I appreciate it. So
you're welcome. Welcome.
The floor is yours.
Well, go ahead, Jen.
Okay. Well,
I just could go back,
you know,
10 years with me, or it could start with you, but yeah. I think if you want to start off from with your show we talked about, I'll go with your flow.
Okay. Yeah, it is like, where do you start? I mean, you guys can hear me, right? I'm just making sure that...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yep. We hear you. Oh, she fell. She dropped.
Is she off the line? Oh, she is. Okay. Yeah, I'm just actually, I just wanted to say this right now, but I'm actually in my bedroom, or in my room. I don't have an office, so I'm... just some noise out in the other room. So hopefully,
is there bad Wi-Fi there? Oh, there she is.
No. Oh, there she is. I was saying, she's in Connecticut. I'm in Maine, so yeah. I don't know what her problem is.
What happened to you, Jen?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the technical difficulties. I have ear pods in so that I can hear you better. And they're touch earphones, and if you touch them the wrong way, then they hang up the phone call. I didn't mean to do that.
I hate that. And
my God, they're the worst. They were the most expensive.
My headphone. I like the ones that you put, like, that you attach to the phone, and put in your ear, the old fashioned ones. But I have an.
They work better. They really do.
I have a Galaxy, and I use them also, I'm on my third pair, and I use them also when I go running or walking. So I can hear, but nobody can hear me. So now I have to get a new pair. I should have got one yesterday. Anyway, you were about to start.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, you get into this system. I just want to say, as a citizen in the United States, we seriously do believe that we can call 911. We can report whatever happens to us. That's what everyone believes. We trust our authorities. We trust our government. Mm-hmm. We're raised to do so. And then when it happens to you, you think it's never going to happen to you. And when it does happen to you and you do all the right things, you report. I mean, the statistics are wild about how women who report domestic violence, and I don't mean to be gender biased because I know that men get abused as well, but the statistics in the court, especially when there's children involved in the family court, it's outrageous. It's somewhere near 90% of women lose custody of their children because of the coercive control of their abuser, the finances. They lose everything. And especially if they've got a controlling narcissistic abuser, and then you get launched into the court system, and the court system does not, it favors abusers, and it favors men. I mean, men who report abuse usually win your case, and women who report abuse lose everything, custody, home, belongings, assets, everything. I mean, it's staggering to me, and I don't understand, you know, how it got that way. It seems that all of the court systems, not just in the United States, not just in Maine, but in the world, because we know victims and hate moms that are in literally in other countries, and it's been the same for them. It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem that needs fixing. And I think the only way that that's going to happen is for people to speak out. And that's a really tough thing to do when you're a victim, because you're ripping yourself wide open and you're subjecting yourself to criticism and slander from your abuser and his flying monkeys. And if you speak out too loudly against the court system or the police, then you also can be, you know, turn around and find yourself in hot water that you never thought you'd be in. And that I see that consistently with victims that I advocate for. And it's just, it's pretty sad.
Well, expressing that small town Maine.
I mean, my case goes back to 2005, but then 2012, the same area detective that we'll be talking about with Jen 10 years later, you know, did I really think this was going to go full circle with him and continue the victimization of other women and the amount of people? So it's Maine in general. It's, you know, it's not just the small town area, but it's just the coincidence.
No, but I'm saying,
the,
like, when
the
I think of Maine, I think of it as a little, you know, state, you know, in northeast.
It's actually a huge state. It's a big state.
Really?
One of the biggest in the country.
Line.
Oh, yeah.
I think the coastline stretched it would be 3,000, but there are a lot of inlets.
Okay, but
yeah,
you
got it on the map.
But all this happened in one little town, right? One little city?
Well, mine was in a county, in a few counties that are side by side, the different things that have happened, but mostly the same.
You're dealing with
the same
department.
Yeah, the deputies, the sheriffs that are in the state of Maine. There's been an oversight. There's been, you know, actually one of the newspapers up here, Bangor Daily News, even did a huge article on the corruption on the deputies and the sheriffs and the misconduct and the oversight of, you know, writing down, you know, those complaints that have been filed. So it's not just Jen and I coming forward. It's even the journalism. They won an award for this 5-part series on the whole state of Maine. So ironically,
and our papers won't pick up any of these stories. They'll pick up a murder.
Until
there's a murder or a missing person, they refuse to touch any family court or, you know, domestic
violence.
Well,
not violence necessarily.
Is that
in
what
Florida.
Florida is like?
We can't get them.
You say when there's a murder, the case that comes to mind for me is you what?
Yeah. No, go on.
The case that comes to mind when you say they'll report a murder is the case of little Gianna. We were just talking about that recently. Little girl from Maine. I think she couldn't have been 3 years old, not even 3 years old. She was taken from her mother in Maine through the DHS system, Department of Human Services, which is, you know, Maine's version of CPS and other states,
right.
And given to a complete stranger in another state down south. I'm not sure if it was Georgia or it was a southern state. And, you know, DHS makes decisions, and they allowed the stranger to take her to another state and adopt her. And she ended up dying. She was burned.
Right.
And this adoptive parent did not get proper care for her, and she died of sepsis. And this person has lied about it. The police have covered it up. I mean, she's a beautiful little baby. She's gone.
I attached it to the comments in the show, by the way. So whoever wants to read the story, it's mind-boggling.
It is, and it ties into the whole DHS's trafficking children. And if you Google that, it's surprising the articles that will come up and how many people have been victimized by DHS and lost their children, have no idea where they are. They were given away to strangers. I mean, how does that even happen?
Because they're property.
It's a big rabbit hole to
kids
go
are not,
down.
Children are not seen in the court system or within the judicial system as humans. They are property. And
that's
money makers. And that's all they are.
Money.
Nobody looks to see. Go on, I'm sorry.
No, I was
what were
just
you gonna
agreeing,
say?
Bailey. I was just agreeing that it's a money profit, unfortunately, I guess. Go ahead.
When people talk about, you know, training judges and blah, 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 it's not going to happen. You know, judges should have psych evals. Yeah, they will all be gone. And remember, the government profits off of family court and everybody involved. So unless we do away with family court, I think between $60 and $80 billion a year business.
Yeah, I thought the United States was one of the nations that profits, you know, for putting people, incarcerating them, but also through DHS, and just crazy, the statistics that you just mentioned.
Yeah, it really is.
There's
really
huge financial motive in the courts, there's huge political motives in the courts. It's crazy. I mean, they meet behind closed doors and make agreements, and they treat their client. They don't care if you're guilty or innocent. They don't care, you know, who your children are. They just care about their career, their money, and where they're standing in society. And these are the people that are supposed to be making decisions in the best interest of the family, in the best interest of the children. Women end up homeless and on the street when they report domestic violence. And, you know, speaking from personal experience, it can really, really ruin your life. You've got to be a strong person to be able to bounce back from that, to fight it, and to get back up on your feet again and to speak out. So many people just don't say a word. You don't say a word because it's too difficult to do that. And that's how these people who are the abusers continue.
I think Jen and Maine, the indigency, like the indigency lawyers, the indigency people that need their lawyers for free, there's no board that oversees what they do or how they perform or how they act. So they pretty much can get away with quite a bit of stuff that other states would otherwise require their, you know, the indigent lawyers to be able to do, or, you know, certain steps that they need to follow and whatnot. So. And we have such a huge bill up here that apparently the lawyers aren't getting paid. So they're probably shuffling, making deals, or doing what they, you know, we all know that they do behind closed doors.
Right. That's the one thing I've seen so far down here in Florida is in criminal court, when it comes to getting a, what do we call it down here? My gosh, it slipped my mind. You call it an indigent. We call it whatever. I forgot what it's called. Anyway, you get a lawyer for free through the court system. I can't believe I forgot what it's called. Anyway, so far, like even for my ex, who was not indigent and was able to get one anyways, with a warrant for his arrest down here, had a good lawyer, had a good, you know, court-appointed attorney, and somebody else that I know who went through, you know, with because of her ex, and was another mom dealing with the system, and he tried to get her trespassed and all that kind of BS. She had a really good attorney that did her job and, you know, made sure to get all the proper documents and got her off. But, you know, that's probably the only, like what and she was not a criminal. Okay. But I think the criminals are treated better and the abusers are treated better. We're just, victims are just a number down here.
I think it depends on who you are and who you know, and it really boils down to money. If you have money, you won't you're not going to see court. You can just pay somebody off and you don't have to go to court. You know, you can just bypass all that. But who has millions of dollars or thousands of dollars these days? Not I.
Yeah. That's one of the things that gets you into financial trouble if you're not indigent. Mm-hmm. If they deem you able to pay for your own attorney and you're going against, you know, your ex who, you know, you may have been married to and may not have been married to but possibly have children with, he can afford a much better lawyer than you can, or the other way around, and depending on who the abuser is, and it drains all of your finances.
Yeah.
I know several people who are dealing with court cases right now who are working, you know, multiple jobs just to pay their attorney fees, and the amount of court work, paperwork and all of the things that, I mean, every single cent is going in, and they've got to start GoFundMes for help
it's
with attorney
crazy.
Fees. It's crazy. It's a huge,
but it's
money
not
making.
Even it's not just money. It's also who you like. I have a court watch this week. Okay, I've been watching this case for quite some time. They're both doctors. Okay, and you know, she signed the 50-50. She did her part. It's the guardian ad litem that's keeping the case going. And she's on her third set of attorneys. She's on her third set of attorneys. She had to get attorneys from, like, a county 10 over or 20 over that were not part of the organization. But unfortunately, this guardian ad litem, you know, must have something going, or I'm assuming, with the father, because, or the father's attorney, because they just keep this going and going. And I mean, it was supposed to be over with 7-8 months ago. She did her part, signed off, whatever, and gave up a lot. And now all she's doing is working to pay the attorneys. That's all she's doing, working round the clock when she doesn't have her daughter, or even when she does that, when whatever. She's just working literally to pay attorneys. I mean, I think they're up to $300,000 on her part, $300,000 or something. And,
like,
you know,
I have to refinance my house for that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not even normal. All because, you know, one person in the organization has it in for her and just wants to see her go down. They're trying to break her. And she's lucky. She's got good support and she's got good attorneys and they're not falling for it. But, you know, if she didn't have that situation, she probably would have lost her daughter. God forbid. And, but the stress, I mean, it should have ended 8 months ago, you know, and the judge is, I think, starting to see what's going on, unfortunately. You know, we'll see what happens this week, but the guardian ad litem is playing dirty, and it's not even about the child anymore. It's, like, ridiculous.
Do you attend each session, if you mind me asking, to complete the court?
I've been watching this case. Thank God it's been Zoom. So I've been watching this case quite, like, I don't know, 8 months, maybe more. And I know the girl personally. I mean, she actually just texted me before. I know her. Like, we become close because you feel their pain. You empathize, like, this is so unfair. It's ridiculous. It's a shit show. And it's like, it's just insane. And so they both have money, and it's just a business to keep it going and to break her. And she's not breaking. She's a tough cookie, but it's exhausting. And, you know, she's just one of many. You know, some of them have to go pro se. I'll never forget, Jen, your court case, your criminal case, was my
in
first court watch, and I had no idea I was even court watching.
Me neither.
I had no idea that that's what it was called.
I mean, it was funny, but mm-hmm. I was there when you, geez, you were a hot ticket, I'll tell you, Daily.
Oh, did I rip that attorney? Oh, my God. We still have
you
to file
did.
A complaint against him. And, you know, I still have his text.
Didn't he want you
I
to get off the show, or he didn't want you on Zoom any longer?
No, he just cursed me out because I called for my real I texted him for my real number. He's like, this is this
but
number.
But he did it on the record.
On the record, yeah. And you had asked. Kelly, you had asked, could we put something on the record?
Yes.
What did you ask?
Yes. I don't remember exactly what it was.
Like the sixth time that what's-his-name didn't log on or something.
Oh, that's right. I've followed Jen for like almost 3 years, so I apologize for not remembering every little bit of her story. There's just been so much blended together, and it's just so... but yeah, we had asked. This was like his seventh or eighth time not showing up and having so many excuses
not,
and being
not
able
having
to get away with them.
Right,
and why her own attorney didn't bring that up. Like, he tried to stifle her from bringing that up, and that the prosecutor was supposed to be on her side, not the other way around. And it was like, I don't know. Like,
the judge said no or something, or the prosecutor said no. The judge said no, your attorney, who you didn't even need, piped up and said, "Well, I would like to put on the record that this and this and this and this number just texted me and threatened to go to the bar and file a complaint against me." I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah. He had his own little narcissistic tantrum right there in the courtroom, like just like a child stomping his feet around and waving his arms around. And this needs to be on the record, and I demand this be on the record. I don't know this person. And this person just texted me and said this and that. And it was, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed of his behavior. And I was the victim. I didn't need an attorney.
Oh, you couldn't get on.
Oh,
you couldn't get on. You called in. They wouldn't let you on, Jen.
And you know,
do you remember? You couldn't get on. You called in instead.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Here's the thing, Jen. Yeah. Now we can talk about who her abuser was down to Connecticut with. He abused her as well, and we're all three friends now. So that's a little bit for her to tell you down the story, but. The poor victim that was with him that had to bring him to Connecticut to go against Jen is on our side.
See, I don't feel bad for these other victims because they were warned.
They were, but this girl got out. You know, she was warned, but, you know, she got wrapped up in the narcissism, not realizing, you know, how charming they are. And, you know, to tell you, but when we reached out to
her.
He
was lying
to her.
He was lying to her as much as he was lying to me.
She's
and it had been a 7-year.
Yeah.
He's been doing it just for 7 years to her. She said some things about me online, but admitted that he asked her to do that, and I don't take it personally at all. I know exactly how she feels, and I think he was. I know for a fact that he was stringing me along and stringing her along at the same time, along with several other women.
Triangulation.
And, and you know, they said they all experienced similar things. I experienced it a lot longer because, you know, it was years for me, and luckily for them, when you think about it,
let's go back to what about the show tonight. So basically, you know, this man has gotten away for so many years with doing what he's been doing. Crime, felonies after felonies, misdemeanors after misdemeanors, abuse after abuse, and he's still out there living his life. But then
when it comes to
women who something happens, whether it's just a family dispute or whatever, or somebody killing a child, you know, it's just, well, okay, that's a different story. But, you know, they'll just lock you up and no problem. Or, again, you know,
instead of protecting and, you know, protect and serve, you know, it's like, you know, there's a different story that's, oh, well, you can thank your governor for being arrested. Oh, I can. Okay, that's our state. But then there's another case where, well, he didn't get arrested. They didn't want to press charges. And then the next week it's, oh, the DA needs to decide. Well, okay, basically then there's three different systems going off here in this state, which means we're not a mandated state to arrest anybody unless there's, like, a protection order in place. So stop lying about that, first of all. It's really who
you
are.
But then to get a protection order, I mean, that's hard sometimes.
Well,
you know,
we'll
I didn't get a chance to post this, but there was a story about a woman that was murdered, and she had two protective orders. So they don't even really mean anything. Jen, you had, right?
No. Me? Yes, I have. I got the longest one. I got the longest one that you get in the state of Connecticut, 5 years, that covers myself, my
mine
child.
Mine is still going, I think.
Our home and our pets. So there's 4 years left on it because his 1 year of probation recently ended at the end of September. The last time I was on your show, he had not yet been to court because he kept delaying it, as you just said. I believe it was at least 6, possibly 7 missed court dates for various excuses. And, you know, by the end of that, I was really I've had it because I had been to court every single time, even
right.
during COVID. Even I have an immune
right.
suppressed disease. I shouldn't have been in a courtroom, but I went even on Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, we had a court hearing, and do you think he showed up? No, he did not. I was there. I waited for, I don't know, 45 minutes, and then I was told that his attorney had requested a delay, and it was approved. Of course it was approved. I feel like they rolled out the red carpet for my abuser on every single court occasion, because anything that he asked for, they approved. And anything that I presented, which was all factual, for example, the last time that he did not show in court, finally, with me speaking up and saying this is not okay, he's lying to you, he's not really working, he doesn't have the quarantine, he's, you know, not sick, they didn't care. But they did finally issue a $20,000 warrant for him. And I thought, well, hallelujah, there we've got some justice going here. They're going to do something about this. And, you know, nothing. I hear nothing. I hear nothing. I hear nothing. And I called and I gave the sheriff's department in Maine his location because I knew where it was. And I thought for sure they'd go and pick him up because they had a warrant for his arrest. But that would mean extraditing him to Connecticut and everything, and they don't want to do any of that because it costs money. And so nothing happened. And then we had another court date, and he was supposed to be there. They never arrested him. He was saying that the reason that he didn't show was because he was in the hospital, and I did some research, and he had indeed been in the hospital for over a month, but he was released at least a week before the court hearing, and posting pictures on social media saying that he was partying, and you know, so I had screenshots of that stuff. I had screenshots, and I went in and asked the judge to insist that he prove that he couldn't in court, and he had none of that. I had the proof that he was lying, and they completely ignored me. And what he did was he had, when he felt like coming to Connecticut, or when he could arrange coming to Connecticut, he asked his attorney to ask to have that warrant rescinded. And they made an agreement with him. And his warrant, they made this agreement behind closed doors, his attorney and the judge. I know that's how it happened, because everything that came out of my mouth that was proof that he was lying, mm-hmm. And then I gave my victim statement. They listened to none of it. They accounted for none of it. They'd already made an arrangement for him to turn himself in. They would rescind the warrant. And not only did they give him a plea deal to drop the felony charge that he had, but they gave him less of a sentence. Originally, he was supposed to have, I believe it was 18 months of probation and a year in jail that was suspended. And they ended up giving him only a year in jail, all suspended, and 1 year of probation. And that's the minimum that you need to have interstate compact agreement, which is when they transfer your probation from one state to another, because these were the Connecticut charges. Now, I have to explain that this man abused me in two different states, Connecticut, where I live now, but I'm originally from Maine, and he's from Maine, and we were in Maine a lot visiting family and stuff. And so the case with him spans two states and four counties, one county in Connecticut, three counties in Maine, right? And there were, I have mentioned this before, there were 19 other charges that were submitted by the Connecticut State Police for a warrant for him, and the prosecutor denied signing it. Police called me and said they were dumbfounded because it was the largest case that this trooper had ever worked on in his career. And that's a direct quote. His supervisor approved it, and they weren't the ones that made the decisions, and they're really shocked that it wasn't signed for a warrant. It was 19 charges, including strangulation, endangerment of a child, multiple assault in the second degree, multiple felony violation of protection order, false imprisonment because he held me in the bathroom and said he was gonna. I thought my life was gonna end that night. I did not think I was gonna make it out alive of that bathroom. It's disgusting that that wasn't dealt with.
Yeah.
And then in Maine,
they'll waste.
We go to Maine.
In Maine, they'll waste taxpayer dollars to lock up you guys for family disputes that the police, you know, coerced or wrote false reports, and just, you know, make up all this crap and lock you up because they just enjoy doing that.
Well, and that's how they try to stop, you know, the voices or, you know, for us to speaking out against this, you know.
That's what it is.
You know,
they want to shut you up.
Yeah, you get stiff opposition when you are an advocate or an activist or you're out doing something. You know, they're going to find whatever they can, and they're going to, you know, do that. You know, oh, here's my opportunity. This is what we're going to do now. And that's what they do, you know. And so unfortunately, when you go through something like that, you're like, okay, wait a minute. And then, you know, three attorneys later, and then 15 months later, and then it's still going on. Like, I can understand why some people, including myself, will say, okay, you know, I just want to I just want to get out of this charge. I'm just going to plead, you know, to the disorderly or offensive gestures because, you know, my bad. I called 911 for help, and looks as well I got myself into. So when you're looking at the paperwork thinking, this isn't even what transpired. This isn't what happened. And you look apart and pick apart all the misconduct, and you relay all this information, but you already know the whole system really inside and out based on other victims that have gone through the system and or yourself. It's that way anyways. You know, like, I mean, I'm hoping that at some point the women I've spoken to in the past few years will come together and have a class action suit in this area, because there's like at least 8 or 9 women that I know of that have been very wronged by the department. And I'm sure that the women that have been arrested, I would probably bet money on that that the numbers are higher in women that have been arrested versus men recently under this deputy, this detective, and the oversight of this, you know, sheriff's department since the change of hands and the detectives that they had from when I was in the getting help versus when Jen was trying to find to get help for 3 years and denied. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep you updated on that, Bailey.
This DV detective in Maine.
We have a couple of callers. Do you want to finish talking, or do you want me to bring some on?
You can bring them on, sure.
Okay. Is that Stacy? Hello?
No, it's Sandra.
Sandra, I think you both called in. Welcome, Sandra. How are you?
Yeah,
how was your trip back?
Good. Everything was good.
Yeah? You had a good trip. And then you were in Washington.
Yes, I was.
Well, these two amazing women are people that advocates that I know for many years and are helping Sarah Marie with her case. Did you hear the beginning of the show?
No, I just got on now. No, nothing.
Okay.
I haven't heard anything. But hello.
I'm going to mute you. Well, what do you want to say?
What are their names?
Kelly
names? I'm sorry.
And Jen. Kelly's from Maine, and Jen is from Connecticut.
Hi there.
Nice to meet you. I'm in Buffalo, New York.
Oh, nice to meet you
as
well.
So Sandra and Stacy, who are both, I think Stacy's also on, are both advocates and amazing women that help others, and they're in Buffalo. So...
Wonderful.
You know,
Isaac
between
Antonella,
all of us, and Antonella, I think, is on
networking.
Also. Yeah, so basically, you know, we've all been in touch with Liz, who's in jail, also to be kept shut up. Sandra, I'm going to put you on hold, because I do want to get to more of their story, and then I want to get to Sarah's story. I'm going to bring Stacy on quickly. Hey, you. How are you?
I'm here. And this is Kelly. Stacy, you waiting for?
Yes.
Is this me
and Stacy?
Oh, wonderful. This is Kelly.
Hello? No, no, you guys be quiet. Hello? Who's laughing?
Sorry, Kelly.
I'm going to put her on hold. Hold on, I'm going to put her on hold. Hello, how are you? Welcome. Antonella?
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Can you hear me? Good, how are you?
Good. Welcome to the Never Give Up Show.
Hi, how are you? I just got on too, so I don't know too much about,
okay.
You know,
okay.
What's going on and yeah.
So we're talking about the Maine corruption.
Mm-hmm.
The corruption in Maine, like what Sarah Marie's going through.
Okay.
So I'll put you on hold and I'll bring you back on in a few.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to give out our number, 516-531-9643, and we are going to get back to Jen and Kelly. You guys were mentioning about the detective that you both had that ended up retiring, right? Is that the last thing you meant?
Yeah, I just pulled up a couple of emails from that detective that I'll read them to you. This detective he's retired now, but he was a domestic violence detective for 3 counties in the state of Maine, one of them being Knox County, where Kelly and I are both from. That's our hometown. So also my abuser's hometown. And I just mentioned that my abuser was convicted of 2 misdemeanors in Connecticut. He had 1 prior one with me already convicted, so a total of 3 domestic violence misdemeanors in the state of Connecticut. He also has 1 in the state of Maine with a previous victim from years ago. And so he has a total of 4 actual DV convictions. And he had, you know, the felony that was dropped and the 19 charges that the prosecutor failed to want to prosecute. They gave me different reasons for that that didn't make any sense. And in the state of Maine, he abused me in 3 different counties, Sagadahoc County, Lincoln County, and Knox County. 2 of those counties, Lincoln and Knox, were under the supervision of this particular domestic violence detective. So I bundled everything up, huge statement that matched all the evidence that I had, which included video, a lot of video. Most of it, you can't see anything. It's audio because when you're being abused and you want to record something for your safety or use your phone to, you know, call somebody and make sure they can hear it when you're under the abuse of a narcissistic person who is constantly abusing you. I started to go, this isn't okay. First, I started to, he was telling me that these things weren't happening. He'd wake up in the morning and be like, I didn't do that. So I started to record it, not just for proof that it was happening to my own self, but proof in case something happened to me, people would know what happened. And so I've had a lot of audio of him abusing me. I would quickly hit the record button and shove it under, you know, my bed or a vanity or wherever I could get to before he came flying into my face. And there was a lot of that evidence. There was tons of pictures. Kelly has seen them all. I think, I don't know if I sent them to you or not, Bailey, of the injuries that I had, horrific bruises.
Yeah.
You know, wads of my hair that were pulled out by him. Just, I mean, if you saw these pictures, I look at it now and I cannot believe that I was staying in that relationship. I mean, a drum bundled in the way that I was, but I was. And so I sent this detective the package. I had a zip drive with all these files on it, all of the pictures, a very detailed statement of the dates and times that these things happened. There were witnesses, for example, one night in Old Orchard Beach. He put me to the ground in a parking lot and was screaming at me and you know, beating on me, had me by the hair, and three strangers walked up and pulled him off of me and said, hey man, what are you doing to her? You know, you can't beat on a woman like that. And he backed off and said, you're right, I'm sorry. And he walked away. But those three people, you know, saw it. And I had the date and the time and the location, and they probably could have been found. Nobody investigated anything when they dated them. There were also witnesses in Knox County and Owl's Head that told me that they would go on the record. They were never contacted.
And you sent that on October 16th. You sent that on 2020. So remember to bring the dates up, Jen.
Yeah.
That's important.
Right. I sent it to him in October. I'm not sure of the date when I originally sent it to him, but I'm looking at the message he sent back to me after I had pestered him a few times and said, did you get it? Are you working on it? I kept getting no response. And then on October 28th, of 2020, he wrote to me and he said, hi, Jen, I've been receiving your emails. I've been caught up in several high priority cases, but I'll be putting my focus on yours as soon as I have some time, right? So that's October 28th of 2020. And the next, I would let it go, and say, Kelly, I'm not hearing anything. And she'd be like, well, you got to get on. And so I kept sending him emails over and over and over. I kept sending him emails. The next response that I got from him, February 22nd, 2022. This struck. I've examined the approximately 5.5 hours of recordings you sent me on zip drives in detail. It is clear, 5.5 hours of recording of him abusing me. That you sent me on zip drives in detail. It is clear that you were repeatedly attempting to capture Mr. Robinson's, oops, I mentioned his name, my abuser's alleged abuse in repeated recordings of him with you on many occasions. It is obvious from those recordings that my abuser is verbally and emotionally abusive to you. I was not able to gather anything of substance from those recordings that would provide me with probable cause to charge Mr. Abuser with a crime. I will certainly return your zip drives as you have requested. Please provide me with your current address and I will mail them back. Yeah. So he states it was obvious that I was being abused. And then in the next sentence, he states that there was no probable cause for arrest. This man was under there was an active protection order with me. We were allowed to have contact away from my home. He was not allowed in my home, but we were allowed to have, you know, any verbal, written, physical contact as long as it was away from my home. However, if you violate any of the conditions of a protection order, which say that you cannot stalk, harass, or abuse the person that is protected, that's a felony. And every single time he abused me in the state of Maine under that protection order should have been a felony.
And I'm not
talking about small things. He was strangulation, assault.
But Jen, I'd like to add, Jen, that as your advocate and all the emails that I sent on to this detective, to his superior, who's a lieutenant at the department, to the actual higher ups, to the sheriff. I have at least 50 text messages, emails in between Jen's beginning zip drive to the end. And then really, I think it was your attorney that kind of got him to send it to you once, you know, a little text.
That's right. Sent, yeah. That's the only reason he responded is my attorney. Yep. You're right.
So, like, I mean,
we contacted him so many times. Nothing. No. And not only that, but he did go and interview my Mr. Abuser and gave him a business card.
And gave him a what?
Who then, of course, because he gave
Who
him his
that?
Business card. The detective gave him my abuser his business card and apparently told him to give him a call if he had any more harassment from Kelly or Jen because he didn't think we were done with them yet. This is what my abuser posted, his own hand on social media holding the business card. And this was directed at Kelly because Kelly was broadcasting his criminal record. and notifying the public of this violent offender who's in the community pretending that he's Mr. Angel and Mr. Celebrity, you know, and he was at the same time slandering me. This is my hometown, too, slandering me, saying that I'm a liar and I made it all up and he never did any of that. So,
oh,
you know,
and we have to add this, Jen. Bailey, you're going to die at this. This isn't even really funny. When Jen had a conversation with this detective, what was his first thought about you and I talking and helping me and Kim helping you to get out of your relationship and whatnot? I mean, what was his words when he was like, oh.
That's right. I had one conversation with him when he called me to discuss sending the zip drive to him. He mm-hmm. told me that he would most certainly get right onto this because it sounds like this guy's, you know, a really bad person, and he would surely take care of investigating properly. But the first words out of his mouth to me were, I hear you're friends with Kelly and she and I have bad blood. So in case she mentions anything bad about me, that's why. And I thought to myself, what? Wait a minute, what? Because he's a professional in the criminal justice system. He's a detective for domestic violence. And
why did I need to hear any of that?
And then the second thing he did was ask me if I'm related to my daughter. He said my daughter's name, and am I related to her, because we have the same last name. And I said, yeah, that's my daughter. And he said, oh, well, I've had run-ins with her, too, you know, just so you know. And the way that this has come about full circle with my abuser not being charged with anything, despite the horrific abuse, he was on bail conditions too, very specific bail conditions and a protection order. He violated over and over and over, not just with me, but once I cut him off from all communication, he moved on to new women. Now I can count right now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different women since I broke off contact with him was July 28th of 2020. And what's today? November 29th of 2022, right? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 women that he has since then lived with, had relationships with. Two of them were sisters, and two of whom he's been engaged to. And he's abused every single one of them. I forgot the other one. There's another one in between there, so that makes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 women since then in the 2 years. And one of them, he was removed physically from this same town in Knox County, Maine, physically from her home for domestic disturbance twice when he still was on bail conditions and had a protection order on me.
They're waiting for him to snap and kill someone.
I have said
that's
that.
What they're waiting.
I've said that. He's a 12.
And then
he's a 12 out of 13 on Mains of Dara.
Yep.
He's a 12 out of 13 on Mains of Dara, scoring the predictive abuser. And I've said that. And not just that, but with the woman that Kelly was mentioning, the victim who we're friends with now, he had an incident with her where the day after Christmas is notorious for narcissistic people to cause some kind of a ruckus. And they had, and he started in on her. He started abusing her. And she was holding a bottle of fruit punch. And it, you know, he knocked it out of her hand and it went everywhere, red fruit punch. And then he started spontaneously bleeding from the nose because he's got such serious health problems. He had to have multiple blood transfusions apparently when he was hospitalized. And this is all stemming from alcoholism. He's a functioning alcoholic, and he drinks a lot, and it has just absolutely ruined his liver. He's very sick. And if he gets upset, angry, nervous at any time, he can start to spontaneously bleed. So he bleeds in the mouth. Long story short, the police came because they had this domestic dispute. She called 911 asking for help. and they showed up, and it was a he said, she said, and not only did he accuse her of being the abuser, he, and my face is bleeding, look what she did to me, but she didn't touch him. She didn't lay a finger on him, but
it's
he accused her.
Funny.
It's horrible. He told the sheriff's office that she was abusing her animals. She had farm animals. He told them that she was killing them or abusing them with a machete, and that she had illegal weapons hidden on the property. She knew nothing about this. He had hidden a gun on her property. And to think that this man who,
you
know,
was on bail
condition.
Well, he should have not been allowed to have weapons.
He
at the time he
put a spot
he had
on
been,
it.
Yeah, he had been convicted and he was on probation now under that interstate compact transfer. So, you know, he was trying to do anything he could to backpedal and make her look like the problem so that he wasn't arrested under a probation, because he would have been shipped right back to Connecticut and had to serve that year in jail, and he knew it. Well, they believed him, and they arrested her, and she went to jail. They would without even being able to take her blood pressure medication. She had blood pressure so high in the jail she could have had a stroke. This could have ended really, really badly for her. And my abuser, her abuser, went right onto social media, posted a picture of his bloody face, and said, "Oh, I'm not the one in jail this time." She thought she could get me because she knows I'm on probation from it, meaning me, in Connecticut, and look, she hit me, so that he can get all the sympathy and make it look like he's not the abuser. That's deflection. That's what they do.
And I'll add this, Jen, like, as a victim, sometimes I know when I was getting abused, when the cops showed up, I lied. I said, yep, this happened, or I foul, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I lied for him, too.
Right.
To try to cover, because she was more afraid of him
to protect
than
my
the repercussions.
Me and the kids always protected him in the end.
Yeah.
And
so
let him leave. And because
it's disgusting how I did that. I went into court and did that.
I'm going to bring Stacy back on because let's see if she wants to talk. Stacy, are you there? We don't hear you. Nope, don't hear you. Are you on a headset? Maybe hang up and call back. We'd love to hear from you. Stacy's an incredible woman. She's the one that helps Lizzie so much. And I have another 207 number. Do you guys know who that would be from Maine?
I don't. It could be anybody.
Okay. So why don't I open up everybody's mic? So Sandra, and I'll open up Stacy in case she could talk. Sandra, you're open, and Antonella, I'm going to open if you guys want to ask questions to Kelly and Jen, so I could check who this main person is, okay?
I do have a question for everyone. Isn't there like a national registry, just like they put people who are, you know, wanted and people, I think the state, I'm trying to remember if it's the state of Montana or something, where child support lists every single person and how much money they owe. It's amazing. And
Montana has a violent offender registry, I think.
Yeah, isn't there like a national one where, you know, and I hate to diss, you know, other women and or men, but it's our own due diligence to vet people. You know, when you drop your kids off to a babysitter, you don't know if that person, you know, we do our due diligence as mothers to, you know, who's watching the kids and this and that. Why aren't women doing this with people they go out, you know, I don't understand.
I'm going to interrupt you right there, and I don't mean to be, to cut you off, but that's a little bit of victim shaming. I'm going to call you out on that because that is completely unfair to say. The man that abused me, I knew him my whole life. Since we were 7 years old, we were in the same classroom in the first grade, and our mothers grew up next door to each other. They hide this. for everyone
except for their intimate partner in the home. I'm not talking about the people that are on our the podcast right now. I'm talking after. I mean, these are people in their, that was when you were young, people in their 40s, 50s, 60s.
We don't have a national registry. We don't have a national registry yet. I don't think I'm following you with that. Yeah.
I knew him when I was young, but we didn't have a relationship until we were in our 40s. So
and we try to tell. We're doing it personally, trying to let other women know. And, you know, they might know and they can vet and try to do that, but they don't believe it. They don't want to hear us. We're the ex.
When you're the kind of person that's a victim, you're victim or naive or an empath, you're the perfect victim to be
about actual accusations that these people have, like the one woman, I forgot, one of the two was saying, who had a restraining order, who had this, who had that.
Yes.
And it's like, how can the system, you know, and I know that because I was married 27 years. So I get that. But it's like, it should be all in the open. Everything. Everywhere.
But that's what we're trying to say. That's the whole point
of
this show, is the corruption.
I understand, but then you have women who don't want to put their stories out there and then use bogus names. How do we become one if everybody doesn't do it? And what happens is these perpetrators continue until when?
Well, that's on those people. Until they're murdered or they finally get strong enough to leave and share their stories. Look, when I met Jen, she, 2 years ago, I mean, she was a whole different person than she is now, or 2.5 years ago, whatever it was. She's an advocate, and back then she was, you know, a whole different person. You know, it takes a healing journey, takes a lifetime, and to finally admit what you've been through and accept what you've been through, and the fact that your abuser did not get the punishment that they deserved, that's on the authorities. And that's what the point of this show is that she did come forward to try and protect herself and protect other women, and the authorities did not do their job. And, you know, Kelly and Jen in Maine had the same detective for their cases. That detective is retired right now. Recent, right, guys?
Yeah.
Recent, yeah.
Recent. So, I mean, obviously,
a story will come out
eventually as to why he's retired, I'm sure. But, you know, when you are a victim of domestic violence and these horrific stories, you know, these men just know how to play the game. And the judicial system
allows them to play. I wanted to let her know, Maine, she didn't hear this in the beginning. Is it Stacy that I'm talking to?
No, it's Sandra.
Sandra. Hi, Sandra. It's Kelly. Maine had one of the biggest newspapers here do an article on our Maine Sheriff's Association and found they won an award for a five-piece article on all the corruption and misconduct and not being transparency with what they were covering up in this state alone. So we need the police to also, or the officials to help us. It's not just the women, it's the officials, it's all of us together as a community, you know, to make these changes and make things happen.
I completely agree. And at the end of the day, you know, nobody wants to miss their paycheck on a Friday. You know, they're all in it, their paycheck too. And unfortunately, look at how many people, children, women, you know, adults get hurt along the way. And greed is a huge motivator for people. You know, how many people are going to go up and stand up to these son of a bitches and say, you know what, this guy did this, this, and this. I'm talking to the officials. I'm not talking about the the abuser.
Oh, I have, but I get backlash.
You know, and it takes a lot of backlash because you have to be willing. You have to be willing to take a lot of slack for that.
Kelly has. Trust me, they know her there. The sheriff's department does not like her.
No,
they know her very well because she opened
up
her mouth.
Anything and everything. I feel like, you know, the whole community is against me. I feel like they got a smear campaign going on now. I feel like everything from the time I was 2 years old is being going to be held against me. Like, it's just
I'm sorry to hear your story.
Me, you know,
it's very, very sad. It's very sad.
Well,
it's disgusting. It's sad. It's disgusting. Yeah. And if women don't stick together, this is going to just keep going. It's just going to keep going.
Well, that's what they're doing. And they're lucky enough that they have a media that is siding with them and bringing uncovering the dirt. That's huge. I was saying in Florida, our media won't come close to touch any of these. The only time that they'll touch a story is if somebody was murdered or kidnapped or... whatever. They won't touch any of those stories. Stacy's not talking. Stacy, are you there? I'm going to put Sandra on hold and put Stacy back on hold.
I was going to tell Sandra something real quick.
Yeah.
No, my
I'll bring her
back
on.
In 2000. Okay.
Sandra, you're back on.
Yeah, I'm here. You know, Florida. You should find out who did the story on those 17 pedophiles in Disneyland and bring out who did that. You know,
we can't get media to cover those things because the problem with that is that authorities were involved. High-profile people were involved. I mean, this is Disney. You know, they're covering up for each other. Kelly, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, Sandra, my case was as a survivor. I was first in the victim in 2005 when I first got into a domestic violence, my abuser. And then I, you know, in 17 years, I had to come into an act, you know, survivor and an activist and an advocate. And so I was before social media, and I have been dealing with the same detective back then, and now 2012, 10 years later, to see that this stuff is still going on is very disheartening.
Yeah.
You know, with nothing being done.
And Kelly was almost murdered.
If
you would see the video of her, what happened to her, there's a link to one of my shows. I mean, horrific.
Yep.
And she's here to help others. Yeah.
I have a documentary out, Sandra, from a kid that came up. He went to Sunny Purchase Film School, and I met his aunt through New York, and he has a production company. He came up here when he was graduating and did like a three-day little documentary. It's only like 11 minutes, but it was called None So Blind, because in my community, everybody was turning a blind eye to what's going on, you know, as far as the domestic violence and all the corruption and stuff. And it really turned out well. So he came up from New York, and he's done really well with his little production company in New York. So get the people down there, over there.
You know, that's like when people say, you know, when you're younger, not our age now, but, oh, if you ever saw your best friend's husband cheating on you, would you tell on him? You know what? If it causes a rift, and then all these people then start coming against you, people then second down and go, you know what? Why should I tell my best friend if everybody's not going to believe me?
Right.
And it's almost like a domestic violence. You know, that is a type of domestic violence where people are unfaithful and they're financial, domestic. All of that runs under domestic abuse. But how many people are willing to step up to that and take that hit? To defend another woman and the children. I mean, I have no problem, but that not everybody's me. And it's sad. It's very sad, and it turns into somewhat anger because we live in a country that's supposed to be, you know, protecting us, our kids, us.
And you start hearing these stories one after the other, and it's almost like you do want to tune it out because it's sickening.
Yeah. I just think that the more we speak together, speak out against it, you know, I've always been a firm believer, then it's just, you'll get the attention. But then when the squeaky wheel gets the attention and you get too much attention, it's like you want to kind of retreat. But, you know, we all do need to be in together. And especially as a sisterhood of survivors in many different areas, that'll happen. And it's not just a sisterhood. There's men also, so I'm not trying to be biased. But in this particular case, it's a lot of women that I've dealt with. I only have dealt with like one man in the past that shared a story with me and stuff. So, you know.
Sandra, I'm going to put you on hold. Your friend Sharon is on. Sharon, you want to say hi?
Hi, ladies.
No. Hi. Is this my cousin here?
Yes.
Hi. Oh, yeah. This is my... This
is she one of your victims?
Oh, no.
No. She's family.
She's my cousin. She's family, and she's got her own... She's got her own situation. She lives in Florida. She lives in Florida, and her abuser's in Maine. So it's very relevant. So let's let her tell her story.
I'm gonna before you start. Antonella's on. Mm-hmm. Did you want to say anything, Antonella? She left. Okay. Sorry. Her call dropped. Okay, Sharon, talk. I'm in Florida.
Hi.
We live in a very corrupted state.
Yeah.
You went from one corrupted state to another.
Well, yeah, but not knowing what was going to happen when I moved to Florida.
Right.
In my situation, it's not domestic violence. Mine was a child pornography issue. And corrupt down here in the court system, you're absolutely correct. He got a slap on the wrist and then sent back home to Maine in the same town as Kelly. And everybody
detective?
Does.
Was it the same detective?
No. This happened down here in Florida first. And... He's now back in Maine because that's where he could go back from committing this crime. If you live here in Florida and you come from another state, you can go back to where you lived. And nobody checks on him. He checks in once a year to the police department, and they don't care. They do not care what he does. He is not supposed to be with kids 12 and under, but I guarantee that he is. And his family hides him, and they protect him. And nobody goes to check. Nobody. And he gets away with everything. He was retired Coast Guard. He still gets his whole pension.
And he rides around with a I'm a hero plate.
Yes, he does.
He's asking for all the respect. Yeah. Disgusting.
Mm-hmm. He sucks it right up.
I've called on him myself to report that he was inappropriately around children at his parents' campground.
Of course, children.
No one called me back. Nobody did anything. This is the same county and town where Kelly lives. Same area. We're all from that same home
and
area.
We all grew up there. He grew up there. I mean, so just because he knows somebody, he can get away with whatever he wants, basically. I'm guaranteeing you he has the internet. Actually, I do know he has the internet because he emailed me after the Hurricane Ian was here. So he's got
he's not supposed to have any social media. Isn't that one of his terms?
But he does.
That he's not supposed to have any social media? Yes, he does.
Correct.
Yep.
For 10 years. Mm-hmm. For 10 years. So he got three years in prison for what he did down in FDC Miami, which is a hard ass prison. And how he made it through there alive, I don't know. But he did. And then he got to go back home without a care in the world. Doesn't care about his daughter.
Yep.
Doesn't care about me. It's just he got his money and he's got a slap on the wrist. And that town, the town back home, they're just exactly what you guys said. It's a blind situation. And nobody wants to hear about it back there either.
No, they don't. You post
and
anything
sad.
About
look,
this
I
kind
told
of
you,
stuff,
my
you
ex
no one to, no
came
one
out of jail.
Because they turn a blind eye.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
It's
my
crazy.
Ex came out of jail, told his probation officer, F you, I'm leaving the state. And he left.
Yeah.
That's
they
what mine
him,
did, too. Yep, same exact thing.
FTC Miami put him on a plane to go back to me. They paid for him to go back to me.
Did they really?
Mm-hmm.
While he was on probation?
He got straight out of jail and went out of prison and went straight to me. He couldn't
they
stay.
Wanted to
he,
get
if
rid
he
of
stayed
him.
Here, yeah, and if they if he stayed here in the state of Florida, he would have had to have been a registered sex offender his entire life. So he goes back home to Maine where he can have his 10 years probation and then he's done.
And that doesn't affect his pension.
And they wipe
at all,
him off the registry,
stuff.
Right?
They take him off
so
the
they
registry.
Take him
yeah.
off the sex. Can you believe
yeah.
that? They take him off the sex registry. He should be a lifer.
Yeah.
He
exactly.
would be a lifer
yeah.
in Florida,
be,
but in
it
Maine.
Should be state,
in Maine.
It should be
no?
worldwide.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
but then
and
when
can
I
we
know.
Talk a little bit about Sarah's case?
Yeah. I think Jen knows quite a bit about it. I haven't been following it. I mean, I've been following it, but I just a lot about the Hague convention.
I haven't heard this one.
Yeah, Sarah Marie, her case is it's absolutely mind-blowing. It's staggering what's happened to this woman. Her children, she has two little boys, and I believe the oldest at the time was 7. And she had been being abused by a high-ranking military officer in York County, Maine. And she, you know, as we do, eventually knew she had to get out because it wasn't just her being abused, but her sons were also being abused and vocalizing this to people. Nobody helped her. The courts didn't help her. The police didn't help her. She was re-victimized by the system, like we all are. And he was continually allowed to have visitations, unsupervised visitations with those boys. And they didn't. And the boys didn't want to go. They were vocalizing that they didn't want to go. And so she took a gamble and went for lawful asylum in Canada. She left Maine and went to Canada with the children. And she requested lawful asylum, which eventually was granted to her. However, before that decision was made, they were staying in an Airbnb, and her abuser is a high-ranking military officer with connections in the community and in the criminal justice system, and he used all of that. And she was raided at the Airbnb that she was staying at in the middle of the night. Guns were pointed at her head in front of her small children. They took the children away from her and returned them to the abusive parent in York County, Maine. And she was given the choice whether she could stay in Canada and under asylum or return to the state of Maine. And she wanted to fight for her children. If she stayed in Canada, she would be there without her children. And the whole thing was reason that she went there was to protect the children. And when she returned to Maine, she was hoping that this could all be worked out in the court system, and instead they charged her with kidnapping her own children Her conditions include not being able to set foot in the state of Maine. She has to wear an ankle bracelet that's caused permanent nerve damage to her leg. I've seen the pictures. It's horrific. There's huge lesions all around where this thing is strapped to her ankle. She's lost her ability. She's a highly educated person, professional person. She's not able to work in her career because of these criminal charges that are against her. Her abuser slanders her all over the place. The court system and the police refuse to drop this case against her. It's you should really, anybody who is interested in finding out the depths of corruption in the state of Maine and you know what a Hague mom is. And it, when you talk about Hague mom, it's the Hague Convention that has to do with children leaving with a parent out of another country. We know several of those. And it's just absolutely horrific what's happened to this woman. She's, all of her finances have been drained, trying to pay for attorney's fees. Mm-hmm. She's got a GoFundMe right now, which I believe Bailey is going to link, as well as a petition for change.org. And there's information, really important information there.
It's attached to the mm-hmm. show. So. Go on.
Oh, good. Okay. There's information in the petition, in the change.org petition, on if anybody listening to this will sign the petition and then go even further and write to the court officials involved, all of the information is there. And her GoFundMe is there as well. She's currently seeking, the last I knew, she needed another $4,000 to pay for an attorney who specializes in Hague Convention and these kinds of cases. She's looking at some serious, serious jail time. She has not seen her sons in almost 3 years. It's absolutely insane. And who knows what they've been told and where they think, what they think's happened. Last time they saw their mother, she had a gun to her head in the middle of the night. I mean, mm-hmm. that's not in the best interest of these children. That's not reunifying families together. That is siding with, and oh, also on top of that, because of everything that her narcissistic abuser has said, they wrote an article in the Bangor Daily News completely siding with him and saying that there was a long history of domestic violence with this family. She had protection orders. She had reported them many times. Long history. He went and said after this happened and she was charged with kidnapping, he said that she had made everything up, that it was all lies, and that she was trying to parentally alienate him. Bangor Daily News did a write-up about her case saying that she was the abuser and that she had made everything up in an effort to alienate him from his children. And they completely, just made her look like a terrible person. And that's not what happened at all. And there's a lot of evidence that this boy was born.
You're damned if you do, you're
damned
if you don't.
Well,
if you stay, you get killed. Your children get killed. If you mm-hmm. if you leave, you're kidnapping. What the heck are we supposed to do?
Well, and here's the thing.
He's messed up.
They discussed the Bangor Daily News. They know that the system's corrupt. They just won awards on the sheriff's department and what the corruption was. And now they're writing a story believing whatever they're being told is kind of, I don't know.
It doesn't make them look very good.
It's hypocritical is what it is. And you know what? I brought up today, Janet Mills, the governor of Maine, claims to be a domestic abuse victim herself. And there was I write up in an article that I found where she talks about having a gun held to her head by a family member or a person she cared about a lot who was an alcoholic. So, she's a big advocate for domestic violence, but yet look at what's happening under the watch with all of these, with all these governmental agencies.
So
there's
not
corruption
really doing
at every level.
Wow.
No, she's
Stacey,
not. I mean,
you
can
now?
Say whatever you want to make yourself raise higher in the political scenery, but unless you take action, against all of the corruption at every level, and there's so much of it. There's so mm-hmm. much of it. And most of society has no idea. You really don't know until you've experienced it. And everybody does too. When you're the victim of a narcissistic abuser, whether you were physically abused, verbally abused, financially abused, or otherwise. And Sharon says that she wasn't a victim of domestic violence, but I really kind of think maybe she has been, because I know for sure that there's been financial abuse. I know for sure that there's been verbal abuse. You know, that is domestic violence. That is, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be hit. You don't have to be physically injured for it to be domestic violence or abuse.
And it's very, very real. It's very real.
Sure is. Yeah. And her ex is really a number. He meets all of that narcissistic personality disorder criteria, mm-hmm. manipulation and the coercion, the lying, the covering up, the slandering the other person, the parents, the family members who coddle like a baby. They always have a parent, usually it's the mother, but, you know, my son can do no wrong. There's always
right.
that.
It was all my,
and
it was all my fault.
Yeah. Yeah, they came and took your truck, right? Didn't they take your truck?
Yeah.
And call you a not
they
a very
called
nice
me a
name?
Lot of names.
Yeah.
Yep. 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 They came all the way down to Florida to get his truck because he wanted his truck.
Yeah, and this my cousin worked her butt off to pay all the bills while he's having a vacation in the penitentiary for child mm-hmm. porn. And she stood by him
crazy.
For a long while. You know, she didn't want to believe all of what I read in the discovery, and I'm not going to mention it because it made me physically sick to read what this man was doing.
Exactly. Ugh. I mean,
are you talking about Sarah Marie?
To figure it out.
Are you talking about Sarah Marie?
No, I'm talking about. No, I'm talking about my cousin's case right now.
Oh.
Sharon, that's on the line.
You know. Yeah.
But I mean, it made me physically sick to read what happened to Sarah Marie as well.
Getting back
Absolutely.
To, you know, we started off talking about sex trafficking, and that's really, you know, children are property. They're not, nothing's in the best interest of the children. And
it is not.
And the minute you cry abuse, sexual abuse, domestic violence, you use the word alienation, your children are gone. They're taken from you. They'll mm-hmm. throw you in jail to shut you up. This is what happened to Lizzie, who's now in a psych ward, you know, from
I was just
going to
say, or the psych
or whatever.
Ward.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, all of your constitutional rights have been violated over and over. Your civil rights,
mm-hmm.
every right, every single everything
yep.
wiped away.
You are
like
you are 100% correct. 100% because I the day I got divorced, I lost my TRICARE insurance, but he still has it. He gets everything. I have nothing. Well, I can't say nothing, but I don't have insurance right now. But they allow him. The government allows him.
You can reach out to me and I could try and help you. I'm a broker.
Okay. and he gets everything. He's like being praised. You went to prison
for abusive people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the gun pointed to his head. I did.
Yeah.
So how fair was that? But he's, you know,
yeah,
fine.
They raided your house
him.
With long guns, right?
Yes. I had a long rifle in my face. I stood in front of that because my daughter was there. So, I mean, it's just crazy. And it's somebody who you didn't think would ever break the law. Ever. Nothing. And nobody saw it coming. Nobody. Especially me.
They're good at hiding what they're doing.
They are very good. And we went to Disney every month.
But that's what happened to Olivia. You know, I actually spoke to her last week. Unfortunately, the call did not record because I probably had it on speaker. And she was saying that I said to her, you know, almost 3 years ago when you found out about his pedophilia, like, you know, she figured, you know, the naivety and innocence of who she is and who she was, figured she can handle it on her own, you know, and she confronted him and figured he'll get help and that's it. And then he turned on her with all his power and connections and shut her up, you know, tried to shut her up. And until he realized she's not going to shut up and used all his connections to get her thrown in jail. And, you know, usually, you know, for violating a restraining order or an ex parte, you're out of jail the next day if you go to jail. If you even go to jail. And with a slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
You know, my ex got away with violating a restraining order after leaving the state and having a warrant for his arrest. He got a slap on the wrist. So, yeah. You know, her rights have been...
Mine didn't even get arrested.
It's really horrible. But, you know, it's almost like... You know, the cops, it's almost like the judicial system is like, okay, as long as you know, this is how I think about it. It's like, let us join. Let us be a part of it, and we'll keep you safe.
Mm-hmm.
Let us join in, and we'll keep you safe.
Hey, Bailey, yeah. It's Daisy. Can I say something?
That's almost how it is. Yeah, yeah.
Hi, ladies. So we were just talking about Lizzie and
Stacy.
Yeah,
we've been saying Stacy, hello, where are you?
Oh yeah, I know. Somebody called me and then I was on mute for a little bit and then I hung up the phone and then I realized that I was sitting on mute on your program for quite a while. but I just, you know, I hear what everyone is saying and I think it's always good because you're getting towards the end of your show to. Leave your listeners with some good news too, right? Because these are heavy topics and we need some inspiration too to keep us going. So, you know, I talked to Lizzie today and they're trying to force medicate her.
Right.
So far she's doing good and still fighting. And, the other thing is by the time you get to where, you know, this discussion is that you've been having all night, we're pretty experienced in the arena. We've been going through this for a long time, and we know the playbook. We know all the tactics because they've used them all on us at this point. And I think it's our responsibility with our knowledge that this has taught us to also look back and help some people that are new and entering the system, especially because if you look to help people that have already been in the system for so long, our cases are much, much, much harder to turn around. But with your knowledge, if you can catch people early on in their cases, you can set the trajectory to winning. You know, the difference is between, you know, trying to turn around a huge ship in a tiny canal versus turning a corner on a motorcycle. When the cases are young and fresh, they can turn around like a little motorcycle versus a huge cargo ship in a tiny canal. So we need to look back and help some of the new people entering the system. And recently I had a case that reached out to us, and it's so outrageous, but it was a gentleman who was living in another state, and the birth mother was living here in town. And the birth mother died, but the birth father from another state was always having contact with his kids. He had them for, like, Easter and so forth. And when the birth mother drained her came and snatched the kids and wasn't giving them back to the birth father, and the stranger filed a petition for custody. And the family reached out to me and they said, you know, oh my goodness, my nephew's in trouble. This is what happened. And some stranger took the kids and we think he's been in trouble with CPS and we think he has a violent history. And I said, okay, you know, all you can write in your documents is you think, right? But we'll do the motion to dismiss the stranger's petition for custody because the stranger has no standing. And we'll go to court. And we went to court and did court watching like Bailey does. And come to find out, the stranger is actually a pedophile who dated the mother in his past, sexually abused the children, had a 3-year order stay away, and that expired June 2021. So he used the mother's death as an opportunity to kidnap his victim. And the court was giving him standing until we showed up as court watchers. And it's so crazy because this judge has a terrible reputation for trafficking children. And she only gave the biological father temporary custody. Initially, he was only allowed to call his kids, being the biological father. And gave him temporary custody. He got his kids back to the state where he resides. And just yesterday, the judge dismissed the petition for the pedophile and gave the father full custody. So it's really important that we reach back and help these, you know, budding cases because we can really spare a lifetime of harm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, Stace is an incredible advocate, and she's still dealing with her ex abuser and pedophile, and doesn't have complete custody of her children. But she's been helping Lizzie, from the beginning, and Sandra and her are close, and they're helping all these people. And you know, it amazes me when people are able to, when they're going through their own stuff, are able to go out there and still help others. Because I know, and I said this before, if I go back 4 years or three, probably 4 years, there's no way I would have been able to help others. I was so wrapped up in what I was dealing with.
The thing is, though, is that I didn't start helping people with the expectation it would help me. I started helping people because I know that the core suffering that we experience,
right,
and being able to spare somebody from that was therapeutic for me. But it also ended up that the more people I help, the more I learn and the more it helps me with my own case.
Right.
So it really gives back when you help somebody too. So
you're able to put aside what you're still dealing with and your pain and help others. Some people are so wrapped up, and I was like that, in my what I was dealing with. Post-separation abuse that was so horrible, I wouldn't even have known where to start.
Bailey,
I was just so not. Yeah.
But you remember, you weren't a seasoned warrior at that point. You would have been considered somebody that's new and entering the arena because, you know, when you've been in the system for a long time, you learn the law. You have to learn the law. Mm. If you don't learn the law, you're going to get run over, you know. So you really have to learn the law. So the people that are learning the law because we've been in it so long and we're fighting so hard, that's different, you know. And like I said, the more people you kind of reach out and help, the more it helps you and the more you learn about your own case.
Oh, yeah.
And the more speed ahead you go, too.
Right.
That's very true.
This is true. But I still give credit where credit is due. And you know, did she drop? She dropped. She's an incredible person. But let me see if Sandra wants to make another comment. We still have a little more time. Oh, she's back. Sandra, did you have anything you wanted to say?
No. Just support for these other women that are out there, and the more this comes out, the more I think people will realize, you know, really what the true definition of domestic violence is. You know, I always use the analogy, and you and I talked, Bailey, I have this autoimmune, but if you look at me, and Stacey, now realizes what I contend with. If you look at me, I look normal. But when it hits, it hits.
I have that issue, Jim.
You know, so so when you see these handicap signs, right, we as a nation, as a population, we look at handicap like, oh, that person has one leg. Oh, that person has one arm. You know, that person has one eyeball. Handicap goes way beyond that. You have emotional handicaps. You have, you know, other things we don't see. And unfortunately, the world judges us on an extrinsic part, and they never see intrinsically what we go through because most of us, like we were all saying, we just go with the flow, but then it gets to a point and you just blow. And then when
PTSD goes.
And that happens, your community changes, your outlook changes, your perspective changes, everything you do changes. Mm-hmm. And when I contend with my disease that I have, it is a separate entity from me. But if I don't make peace with that disease, it's going to own me. If we don't make peace with what happened with us, it's going to own us.
Right.
And then we become handicapped, not just emotionally. We become it completely. And to make each other strong is to be selfless and not selfish. And to be selfless is a real gift.
Yeah. And I don't know Sharon, but I'm sure a friend of a relative of Jen's, a friend of Kelly's is is as special as they are. And the rest, you know, whoever else is on, Stacy and Sandra, are a complete, amazing, and utterly selfless people. And
kudos to those ladies.
And
yes, you know,
incredible
they just had a super
Go on.
Sorry, Bailey. I was just going to say, you know, the people or the community can try to supersede what others have done or try to bring out, you know, if they do have, you know, PTSD or emotional triggers or disabilities. And then, you know, like Sandra was saying, like it would, you know, probably the character assassination or change their point of view on this person. But it doesn't take away or negate the work that I've done to help others because I do suffer from some of those things, PTSD and depression and anxiety. It's something that I've had to deal with. And like Sandra said, it has taken over at times where I've needed to just back away from my mental, you know, my mental health and well-being.
We all have that. Yeah. You know, there are times I don't hear from Stacy or from Sandra or from you guys. Like, you know, you fall off the face of the earth. Because that we all have to when we've all come to a point, I think all of us, where we know when it's time we need our self care and self maintenance and mental and to deal with our own mental health. You know, everybody has what they do to help with that, and that's important that we know when it's time for us to take that step back. And I do it. You know, yes, you'll see my posts every day because I have my memories that I have to share, you know, the memes, and then people send me stuff to post, and, you know, I may do it, and it's become like, sometimes it's just become robotic. It's something I'm so used to doing, but I detach because every single day there's so much happening, but we have to know, you know, when it's time to take that, to set that boundary. And, but it's still incredible how every single person that's on here, I'm truly honored to know all of you guys, because, you know, the more of people like you guys and myself that go out there and speak up and share our stories and are out there to help others, the more we're going to recruit, like Stacy was saying, we'll help others, and then, you know, we've already learned a lot of the mistakes that have been made, and we can help them so that they can be one of us. And then it's power numbers. And I think that you know, since Jen, since I met you and Kelly, I mean, look how huge social media and all the advocacy has become. Humongous. In just a couple of years. Right? Our networking has just quadrupled, you know? And that's the only way we're going to bring any sort of change is with our voices and bringing awareness to what's happening out there, because it's almost impossible to believe this is happening, and it's happening in your backyard. It's happening.
I was going to say you can't make this stuff up. Like, we're not just on the fly just throwing this stuff out there. You know, all of us.
No.
So.
No. One of my girlfriends says to me, "You can't make this shit up." She says it every time we talk. You know, she has another story, and she's like, "You just can't make this shit up," and it's true. You can't make this up. Like, you listen to the Lizzie story. I mean, I told her, your story is a movie for the screen. There's no question. The innocent, you know, well-educated woman marries an attorney from Westchester County, New York, houses all over, you know, great life, perfect kids, and then boom. That's like a made-for-screen movie.
Wow, that's...
And
that sounds so much like my friend. I think I've told you about her. She lives in Westchester County. I believe you've spoken to her, Lee. She lived in the same town as me here, and she's lost everything, including her children are here, and she's back in New Jersey with her father. She lost her home. She married a high-powered Westchester attorney, and he was horrifically abusive. She's got video. An alcoholic.
Well, they had the perfect
perfect
marriage for 17 years. And then she found on his iPad, she was using it, and she found some pedophilia stuff, and she confronted him, you know, and he cried, and he said, "I'm going to go get help," blah, blah, blah. And in the meantime, he turned on her.
Yeah,
and
they tell you what you
want
to hear.
Yeah. But she was so naive. And, you know, she, when I talk to her, and I'm sure Stacey can vouch, she's upbeat. She's doing her thing. I said, "I hope you're journaling," you know. By the way, she loves reading material. I have romance stuff. I don't think she wants to read that. She's too intelligent. But she loves care packages, anybody. Rockland County, what's it? Rockland County, Psych?
Yeah, Rockland Psych. It's on Orangeburg, I think it's 140 Orangeburg, Old Orangeburg Road in Orangeburg, New York. Yeah.
Okay. And Elizabeth Harding Weinstein. Anybody out there want to send her care packages? Make sure it's just, you know, safe, decent reading material or whatever they allow to bring in to the psych ward, because they go through it with a fine-tooth comb.
Even just cards for encouragement, thinking of you know.
Yeah. I called and she answered the first ring. I'm like, "Do you hang out by the phone?" Like, I was just walking by. And then right after, I called Jen. Right after I called, Jenny Lynn called, and they were on the phone. She's like, "I can't believe what this girl is going through," and she's so upbeat, and like, you would not believe this woman what she's been through, and she's sounds great. You know, those every recording that gets posted, that's what she sounds like. She doesn't sound crazy. You know, like Stacey was saying, they're trying to get an order from the judge. By a doctor who's never even seen her to write.
I've been in that position before.
Have
all of you all been in the psych ward?
Yeah, I don't know if we've all been in the psych ward, but I've been there a few times. So.
No, but my kids have.
I've seen the judge before. I think the most I've done was, you know, a few weeks,
but
the judge is no fun. That means they're
going to
do. Well, they blue paper you in Maine, and then you go to a white paper. So there's certain steps. If she's going in front of a judge or a doctor, then they want her to do an extended stay version or something, I would say.
No, the doctor, the judge wants her locked up or doped up.
Right.
So they are getting what has to happen, according to your rights and the law, a doctor has to see you within a certain amount of time, I think 24 hours, and he has to evaluate you. Or even, I think even sooner, and he has to decide if you're a danger to yourself or others, and if not, let you go or give you,
I didn't know she hadn't
within 72 hours, they have to let you leave if you're not a danger to yourself or someone else.
Right.
And a doctor has never seen her, and she's there 6 weeks.
She should have been.
She was how long in jail, Stacey, prior?
She's been, basically, they took her to jail like July 3rd or 4th.
So in July, August, September, October, November. So 4 months in jail and 6 weeks, almost 6 weeks or about 6 weeks in a psych for nothing. And she never, but none of her rights, all of her rights have been completely violated in every way, shape, or form. And so a doctor, if a doctor gives the judge an order, tells the judge that she needs to be on medication, the judge will put down an order and she has to take the medication. And if she doesn't, they will shoot her up with medication. They'll tie her down and shoot her up. So the fact that so far that has not happened because she does not want to take the medication, but she knows it's one way or the other, she'll end up having to take it. And then we won't be hearing probably from her because she'll be so doped up. And that's what they're trying to do is keep her quiet.
The same medication.
Is this on the basis of the court or the abuse or her abusive partner saying that she needs to be locked up?
She doesn't even need her ex-husband, supposedly ex-husband, to do anything. Go on, Stacey.
I'm a physician assistant. They're not supposed to put people in psych units unless they are a threat of harm to themselves or others. Literally, suicidal, have a plan, have, a weapon in mind or whatever they're going to use. That degree of risk of harm to self or others, not like, maybe she might do it once in, 10 years while she's here. So the medicine that they want to put Lizzie on, they put my daughter on it because my daughter had disclosed strangulation by her father and she was running away from him repeatedly. And so they put her on the same medication they want to put Lizzie on. And it's an antipsychotic. It's a harsh medication.
And those are horrific medications.
Yeah.
Horrific.
And then they put her on sedatives so she could sleep at her father's house and then put her on Risperdal so she could wake up and go to school. And she 7 years later, is afraid to take any medication whatsoever, not even essential oils on her skin because she's so afraid of medication because she felt
trauma.
Like she was going to die while she was on these meds because they made her so sedated she was scared she was going to die.
Yeah. And they also do things to your head because my middle son was on all kinds of crazy meds. And he has no thyroid, he's had thyroid cancer. He wasn't metabolizing anything properly and the side effects were horrific. He took himself off everything and he refuses to take medication. And he really could use ADD medication. And he does not want to be on anything. He's working really hard with his therapist not to have to go on medication because he's 23, he has a job and everything, but, he just does not, he just doesn't like the way it makes him feel. So imagine taking stuff, being forced to take something that's insane, and it's abuse.
That happened to me in a psych ward. They forced me to take a medication that I was experiencing serotonin syndrome, which is a side effect of an antidepressant medication. And it was bad. And I kept telling them, these are my symptoms, these are my symptoms. And they made me increase the dose and would not release me unless I adhered to that increase in dose. And by the time I was released, I was so sick from it. It was awful. I'll never, never take it again.
So I can close up. This was an amazing show. I always enjoy having you guys, you know, Jen and Kelly and Sandra and Stacy and our other callers. I always, especially you guys, because you're out there just doing, helping, and it's nonstop. And, you know, it's amazing to see people that are just have so much empathy and care and strength. So thank you, all of you, and Kelly and Jen for last minute. And, you know, sometimes some of these shows are triggering. And I know that, you know, we all have our traumas. So I appreciate, you know, Kelly and Jen doing the show last minute. I wanted, by the way, the last 2 days of Family Court Awareness Month, I wanted to, you know, talk about a little bit of family court, which we did talk about it. And Family Court Awareness Month should be every single day, 365 days a year. But unfortunately, you know, what we had to go through just to have 1 month of it and of awareness. So anybody, if anybody is listening live, they can no longer hear us, but they can hear it from the recorded show. So any final last minute words from anybody?
Just thanks for talking with everybody, and it's nice to connect again, you know. So I'm still here. I just kind of dropped off a little bit here and there.
It's okay. I get it.
But I love
Jen,
you all.
Thank you.
We
thank
love you,
you
too. Thanks, Sandra. Eventually, you know, we'll have a convention or something for all of us and all meet. I got to meet Sandra. She was just in Florida. And it'd be nice to meet the rest of you.
Jen, we should go to Florida. You and I can go down and see Bailey.
Yeah.
Because I don't think she wants to come up north when it's chilly and cold.
No. No, I sent my son
away.
Yeah,
it's a fairness.
Any of you want to come, you know? Hotels nearby. I mean, unless you want
to
sleep on the couches.
No, but I would like to say this, Jen. I think that next month is a hard month for us. December is also is this the 2 year anniversary of Kim Seeger, which is your advocate that I introduced you to, this that took her life because of domestic violence. It was her nephew that did the documentary with me. So I would just like to say that. You know, New York lost a very powerful advocate. She was a nurse, and sad to see that she's gone. So this is why we take this
years?
So serious, because this is serious.
Is it two,
yeah.
Because was it right before we met?
It was 2 years
right
ago. We were trying to get Jen out of her relationship, and then she took her life before they got to meet. They were going to be meeting, and she took her life. And she wrote me a message stating that, and I didn't get it in time, but I think, it was because of the domestic violence. She had shit and stuff with Jen too, so it's sad. But I wanted to bring that up.
Very sad.
That's why we're such warriors. So.
And this little girl that you guys mentioned, that I attached a link that was, you know, probably murdered. The little girl that you posted before, what was her name? By the
Deanna.
Stranger that was, what was her name?
Her name's Deanna, the baby.
Deanna,
beautiful little girl. And there's a website called Justice for Deanna. It's a public group on Facebook. So if you just search for Justice for Deanna, you can find it. And there's a lot of information there.
I
that's
posted
a case
the
that
link.
Really.
I posted the link to the
it
story two different ones, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So through that, you can find the name.
the
anyway,
censorship on that
up.
Case and the lack of coverage,
yeah.
Crazy. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, you know,
thank
we
you.
Have to bring awareness to what's going on. You know, children are not property. They are many human beings that are our future. And we need to protect them because otherwise we have no future. All we're doing is having another cycle of abusers or, you know, children that harm themselves or end up being harmed, and we have to end it. I'm going to close out the show now. Thank you guys so much for being on tonight. Thank you, Kelly. Whoops. Sorry, I muted myself. Thank you, Kelly and Jen, for coming on and being my guests tonight, and for Stacey and Sandra and Sharon and Antonella and whoever else called in. I'm sorry, my mind just went blank. Thank you, Charlie, for helping me set up my show and pushing me out there to do this on my own 69 shows ago. And Joe Kwok for having faith in me and giving me this Blog Talk Radio time. Check out my website. We'll be adding new things in the near future. TheNeverGiveUpShow.com, where you can also find this episode probably in a half an hour from now. And I will also post it onto SoundCloud and post it wherever I posted the show. Remember to just be aware of your surroundings. And, you know, if you see something that doesn't look right, it's probably not right. Could be going on right in your backyard, sex trafficking, domestic violence, child abuse. And just reach out. You know, sometimes it's not safe for the person, but just let them know that you're here and, you know, maybe find them resources. And that's really what this is all about, you know, is bringing awareness, teaching, educating others onto what is happening in this world, in every part of this world, in every corner, like I said, next door, backyard, and also to never give up because there is hope. I have to believe there is hope. And to all of those suffering, we're all here for you, and please never give up. Have a great night, and thank you.
With a little perseverance, you can get things done. Sight of blind adherence that has conquered some. Nobody wants to know you now. Nobody wants to show you how. You're lost and on your own. You can never surrender. And if you're back, I'll leave you home. You can never surrender. And when the night is cold and dark, you can see. You can see light, 'cause no one can say.